hear that?
No.
This is madness.
No.
With 900 years old, you reach for the good you are not.
Nerf herder.
I am a Jedi.
Little short for a stormtrooper.
We have what they grow beyond.
Welcome back to the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Chris and Ryan, I am Mike. Sadly, without Sam, but we will get his input next week on the podcast. In this edition of the show, breaking news once again. We have talked about rumors of The Mandalorian and some of the additions to the cast and who we thought would be joining this new production from Jon Favreau. Now we have official confirmation from Star Wars. Pedro Pascal will be leading the effort, but some other new additions. Giancarlo Esposito from Breaking Bad. Carl Weathers was rumored at one point. We didn't talk about him on the pod, but now it's confirmed as well. We did mention Nick Nolte. That's confirmed, but maybe the stunner of the group. Werner Herzog will be in The Mandalorian. I believe the only acting credit to this point is his appearance in Parks and Recreation in that one episode. I'm sure there's more than that. But
yeah. Werner Herzog's only acting credit?
I'm kidding.
Oh, God. Oh. The galaxy is writhing in pain.
Yeah. I cannot.
Nothing but pain, screaming. I was thrilled to hear this. Thrilled and baffled. I love Werner Herzog as an actor, as a director. He's amazing. And to see him entering the Star Wars universe is absolutely thrilling.
What a crazy cast. Like, so many different types of actors and people in this thing. It's insane.
We didn't mention in a previous podcast, we talked about Gina Carano being in it as well. I'm not as familiar with Emily Swallow from Supernatural. And Omid Abtahi, who's from American Gods. But those are the other cast members that they announced at this point. We also had the list of directors from another announcement. And it feels like, you know, we'll get into another conversation about Jon Favreau in this podcast, as we typically do. But it feels like they're really stacking the deck here. I think one of the things I heard about this series from a different podcast, not this one. I don't know why you would listen to another podcast about Star Wars besides this one.
But you heard it from not this podcast.
But I heard it from not this podcast.
I'd be concerned.
Was
if you,
that
if you did?
Was that Disney was playing it safe with The Mandalorian, that they were not going to be taking big risks? But you have to say, if you're going to play it safe, at least they're putting some big money on big talent to take control of this. And it's about as well as you could play anything safe that you could really go into it. So I'm impressed with what they're backing this with, because they know they need this early series to carry Disney Plus, and it has to be a hit.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I like the way they're kind of doing these announcements too. It's not all at once, and that could also be because they just don't have all these people all at once. It's
Chris, they also are very considerate of us and how many episodes of a podcast we need
exactly.
to record.
I feel like they are able to space these out. They also know that they have a year to wait before episode 9. they're dealing with the same issue we are.
What roles do you envision? I mean, I think we can figure out a place for Carl Weathers, Giancarlo. But again, where's Werner Herzog? What role will he play in the galaxy?
Easy. An intergalactic smuggler. It's so obvious.
I mean, we also don't know, though, like, what their idea for CGI in these things is. Also, like, I can envision a lot of different characters on that realm.
The thought of Werner Herzog doing a mocap character is so, like, antithetical to the idea of him that I feel like he'd do it just for that reason.
I want to see it.
He's a mischievous man.
I want to see him eat his digital shoe.
I want to see him get into a huge brawling fight with another digital character.
Yeah, on digital Klaus Kinski.
I think it's thrilling. It was so not a down-the-middle choice, just speaking of Werner Herzog, but basically everybody in this cast are so not down-the-middle choices, which is a relief after the straight down-the-middle choice of Jon Favreau, that that I think it's really exciting.
I think it's also interesting that it kind of gives it some, like, old-school cred, too. Like, if I don't know how in it Werner Herzog has been with, like, as far as filmmaking and kind of like an independent force of an era of time, kind of when Lucas and those guys were coming up. So it kind of like ties it back.
Werner Herzog was like dragging boats through the jungle.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. So it kind of, to me though, it gives it that like that connection point to the 70s and 80s and that nostalgia, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, speaking like of Werner Herzog. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, Werner Herzog gives it that connection to like 70s filmmaking, and Nick Nolte gives that the connection to like cocaine. So it's good.
Well, and then real 70s and 80s acting, Carl Weathers. How can Apollo Creed
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing. I'm telling you, Carl Weathers, Nick Nolte, Werner Herzog, they got a stew going. And Giancarlo Esposito, who's amazing.
Oh my gosh.
Well, like, if you really want to connect a binding geek, Chris, how sweet it is. Revolution has come to the Mandalorian.
Yes, finally.
The Breaking Bad, Mandalorian, Revolution universe.
It's all there. And the Creed universe by just by last name only.
And the Predator universe.
Yeah, exactly. This is
it. Carl Weathers is in Predator,
This is the Mandalorian is the show that ties them all, and the Grizzly Man universe as well. That's
don't forget
all,
the Blue Chips universe,
the 48 Hours universe.
My God, I think they've done it with this, with the Mandalorian. I think they've connected all of cinema.
I think it's like a 3 degrees of separation to a Star Wars movie for any actor.
Yeah, like every actor they add now will just connect like 10 more series.
Who knew that Favreau would be the one to do it for all of us?
Well, all right. One last thing before we get to the Favreau conversation, because look, these two are ready to go at it, everyone.
Oh, man.
This is going to be something special here between Chris
and Ryan. I've got my gloves on.
You got your Carl Weathers Apollo gloves? Is that what you have ready to go?
No, just my typing gloves that I use. I'm just kidding.
He has really dry hands.
Mm-hmm.
This is a minor thought that I had just reading off of this list. Remember when we had a pretty, I mean, not deep conversation, but we talked about Jim Rash and Bobby Moynihan being in Resistance?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, total, have they had more than three scenes in the, 9 or 10 episodes that have been on? Mm. Could it be Herzog is in it for maybe 2 episodes? And if he is mo-capped, that's how they get him in, only 2 episodes.
Right. Yeah, I mean, everyone's pretty ripe for a guest appearance here and there, like the store clerk owner, like the drifter in the desert, some kind of junk salesman, something at the bottom of a well. Those are all characters I could picture Werner Herzog.
Here's
as.
The thing, Werner Herzog, I think, will appear in. We're gonna make a like actual guess. So I think Werner Herzog will appear in 3 episodes.
Ooh.
I think his screen time will exceed no more than 20 minutes.
Sure.
And I think that his character will have at least one facial scar and be missing at least one appendage.
All right. I see your point, Ryan. I think he's going to lead the series and he'll be shirtless the entire time.
I
we
think
revealed
he...
that indeed I am the Mandalorian.
I think it's one cameo scene in a cantina, and then we never see him again.
Yeah, he's going to say, I don't like you either.
Well, exciting news that the cast has now been formalized. The directors have been announced. We know they're in production. They're moving this along. We're getting closer and closer. Disney Plus on the way. Jon Favreau is quoted as saying, we are having a great time working with this incredibly talented group and excited for everyone to see what we're up to. So, speaking of Mr. Favreau, of fame of Rudy, of fame of Chef, of fame of Jungle Book, of fame of Iron Man, and many, many more, or as Chris would tell you, Elf, as it is the holiday season.
Right.
Jon Favreau bringing in the talent, and maybe they can take away from the lack of vision that Jon Favreau doesn't bring to the production.
See,
okay, let me give some context. I've made the argument with two notable Star Wars directors, namely Jon Favreau and Ron Howard, that I think that they are straight down the middle directors who are capable storytellers. So in a text chain that we had, just to let you a little behind the curtain of the droid heads, I said
we only communicate via
Chris
text.
Was claiming that if a director has made a great movie, therefore they are a great director. I believe he claimed it was the transitive property.
The transitive property. Please, right. All you math heads out there, please stop me if I'm wrong.
Any logic heads out there? Oh, baby. Yeah. Probably. I was claiming that all I said was that Jon Favreau, I think, has a real skill for character, tone, and clarity of storytelling. I think that that's true, and I think that he has made many very good to great movies.
Sure.
However, I don't think he's a great director, not only because I don't think that he has like a notable visual style, because I don't think that that necessarily defines someone. I just think that he doesn't make any real interesting choices. I think that he executes very well. So like, I love Elf. I love Iron Man. Yeah. I've stated before, I love Zathura. However, I would never I would never put him in a conversation of great directors.
Wow.
Because I don't think that he is bringing anything as a director that goes beyond his ability to cast and kind of tell a story. That's a necessary skill. That is like not nothing. But I don't think that necessarily that like direction is his strong point in terms of making a striking vision. And again, directors are all built differently. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, it's like,
sure.
If you look at like a filmmaker like Kevin Smith, right, who is a filmmaker who I've loved so many of his movies, I would not be like, what a great director, but I love his movies.
Interesting.
You know, So I don't know. It's an interesting, and I might be wrong. You know,
Ryan, your view sounds a little askew.
Ooh, that's for a few askew heads out there.
Yeah, there you go. I see your point, Ryan, but I have to. I go back to one movie, and Mike, you mentioned it. Elf. You look at Elf. That movie has such a strong it additive to his directing credit, a visual style at the beginning. And just the tone, I feel like Favreau is the director that set a tone of movie that had not been in Hollywood, and a lot of it came from kind of dipping into his, oh my gosh, help me out, the movie So Money, the movie Swingers. In kind of his Swingers route is like his independent spirit, and I think
which he didn't direct, but yeah.
Well, I mean, like, he wrote, produced it, right?
He wrote it.
And he claims to have directed.
So I feel like that aspect of filmmaking was brought to the table from him. And then when he introduced it in Iron Man, this kind of, like, matter-of-factness to realizing what's going on in a picture, I think really set, like, a tonal ripple across that kind of movie and movies in general. Like, I think he... That's why I would label him a great director. I think kind of the playing on the fourth wall kind of thing, or just like sitting with the audience, is what he brought to the table. And I think we would not have had as much of that done as skillfully if he wasn't around.
You know, okay, so I'm inclined to agree with you on this. So, Chef notwithstanding, I think that I don't want to discredit many aspects of direction that aren't just visuals, because there's so much to it. So yes, I do think that he has made great movies, and that may make him a great director. So maybe I'm using the term great shouldn't be like what we're saying. Okay, so here's what I'll say definitively.
Yeah.
I don't think he's an interesting director at all.
Okay.
So in terms of what I've said about him and Ron Howard, in terms of them being straight down the middle, they execute.
Yeah.
I think that they are very capable storytellers. I think that they have made very great movies, and that their skills lie elsewhere other than being interesting filmmakers. So like the comparison of them to like a JJ, right? I would say that the only difference, because JJ could be, you know, an argument could be made that he's a very straight down the middle director. The only difference that I would give him is that I think that he does have an eye for specific images that inspire awe more so than a Jon Favreau.
I'd agree with that. Yeah.
But like that doesn't necessarily, and I also, that doesn't make him not a mainstream director or an
right.
But I do think that he has that like it factor a little bit.
Sure. I think that JJ, he takes some more swings that maybe someone like a Favreau would not take.
Yeah, I think that his highs hit higher. than sure. Jon Favreau's sure. highs. But I think that Jon Favreau is like a solid.
Yeah. He doesn't strike out.
He'll hit doubles.
Sure.
He'll get on base, you know, and like that's not nothing. I don't want to be the curmudgeon on the podcast.
I guess,
you know,
the fun question I always
have. Hey
man,
he does better than I could do.
Yeah. Right. I think a fun question, I always do this with music a lot. It's like 30 years from now or 50 years from now, will we talk about the movies that, let's say, Jon Favreau made?
Mm-hmm.
And if you think no right now, then that maybe that's the litmus test.
I would say no, though, with the exception of Elf being a holiday film. And you can't take the holiday out of that film. But the reason why it lasts is because it's a Christmas film and people watch it every year at that time.
Are you watching
the staying power.
But are you watching Christmas with the Cranks every year?
But a lot of times also how I kind of gauge the excitement that I have about a director, not necessarily a movie, right? Because I could be like super stoked about a movie that was made by a director that I'm like, yeah, they're fine, you know. Mm-hmm. But how I gauge that is generally what I value in a director is like, could anyone else have made that movie?
Yeah,
sure.
So like, what I love about The Last Jedi is that I'm like, I'm pretty confident that Rian Johnson's the only person who would make that movie.
Right.
Solo, Ron Howard isn't even the only person who made that movie.
One of three.
Yeah, there you go.
I still enjoy it. You know, like, I think that what Jon Favreau brought specifically to the Marvel Universe is invaluable. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But, like, when I watch, like, The Jungle Book, I'm like, he's not the only person who could have made that movie. I'm glad that he did, because it's a good movie.
Isn't it a lot, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I feel like I might have missed something in this, but isn't a lot of what he brings to something, or not he brings to something like Elf, but what the success of Elf, the success of Iron Man, is in the script, and he didn't write those. You know,
well,
he's
famously,
not credited.
I mean, Iron Man wasn't even written. But I think his real skill is casting.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think he casts really well, and I think he clearly gets very good performances out of actors. I think that he's obviously a good director. What I'm saying is that I don't get like super stoked about a Jon Favreau movie because I feel like I'm going to see something new. I feel like I'm going to see something that's well executed. And I think with The Mandalorian, whatever his kind of role is, he does have a clarity of storytelling that I think that he could be a good person in the room, especially since he's not even directing it or possibly writing it. He might just kind of be doing thumbs up, thumbs down and guiding it.
Yeah.
I think that may be like a great place for
maybe that's what,
in this
maybe
show.
That's what they need. Maybe that's what they need. I hear you. I think that, there was a period of time where I looked to him inspired just by the fact that he was making so many different kinds of movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was at a time when like people were only making, when directors usually kind of set the genre that like, this is the kind of movie that I make.
Sure.
And this is the kind of movie that I make. And then it was like refreshing to see Favreau do like Elf. And then also do like
a TV movie, Life on Parole.
The TV.
I don't even know what that is.
I don't know what that is.
Looking at his IMDb.
I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. But it was kind of refreshing to see a director like taking on so many things. But then maybe to your point, Ryan, that's kind of what makes him. Maybe by that virtue, he is kind of generic. You know.
Yeah, it's just like, think he's down the middle. And again,
he's like,
that's,
he steps,
we need,
he can step in.
We need directors like that. You know, like everybody can't be. Everybody isn't like a visionary. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some people are just like, get in and get the job done. And you need that.
Yeah.
Like most of the Marvel universe is based on that. Is like, get it done. Do it well. You know?
Well,
there are exceptions.
I mean,
like Ryan Coogler, I think, is a visionary.
Yeah.
And like, he's amazing.
Are you telling me Peyton Reed is not a visionary?
the Marvel universe with Ant-Man got so close to having another visionary.
So close. I did speak to Edgar Wright about his in person. I said to him, I can't wait for his Ant-Man. And I think at that time he already knew it was falling apart.
Oh no, you broke his heart, Mike.
No, it was no wonder he didn't smile in the picture I took with him.
He didn't give you. He actually was gonna. He was fiddling in his pocket for a coin to hand to you. And then he just let it go. I'm so sorry.
Oh, no.
Oh man. You could have gotten that sweet, sweet The World's End coin.
Yeah.
Can I ask either of you, do you have any sort of prejudice against someone who was an actor that didn't necessarily work out as a career in acting that became a director? And I guess you could say his acting career sort of worked out because he still is acting.
Yeah.
But
If you could call it that.
I might be a little unfair in that I'm like, okay, I don't really think that you're the person who's going to lead,
right,
as we've talked about, a truly innovative storytelling or transformational way of, you know, putting something on screen.
I mean,
when you're not dedicated to it your entire life. But
I think there's always kind of a grass is greener kind of approach with that. I think every director probably wants to be an actor at some degree, and every actor wants to be a director, like how every stand-up comedian wants to be a rock star and every rock star wants to be a stand-up comedian.
You mean,
like,
and every sports writer wants to be an athlete and every athlete wants to be a sports writer?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think there's a little bit of that going on. I mean, I think directors are probably posed to be decent actors. I mean, they kind of understand what's going to be seen and how things are going to be responded to. It becomes kind of a will or skill effect, though.
I think the fact that he came in with Swingers was helpful because he established that he was like a creative outside of an actor. Like, if I'm trying, I don't want to, even though I disparage people in the industry all the time on this show, I don't want to, but like, if you know, like if Don Johnson was like, I'm coming out, I started directing, I think I'd be like, oh boy, you know, like that kind of thing. Like just someone who's just like, not like they were never that good. I'm not, you know, Miami Vice notwithstanding, but I think that Favreau, you know, he came in as a writer, kind of. That's where he gained most of his notoriety from the beginning, and I think that that kind of carried. Where it was like, oh, he has interest in doing that. But I certainly, that's an interesting question, Mike, because I certainly don't hold a prejudice against good actors who become directors. But if bad one does, that's interesting.
Well, you know, it's interesting.
I mean, I'll give you a good example of a bad one. Quentin Tarantino. not to like outright disparage somebody, but like when I see him in a movie, I just like cringe
painful.
A little bit.
It is painful. His movie, other people's movies, it is always painful.
He's in Little Nicky. I can't handle it. I have to skip that scene. Very rarely do I do that.
Oh my God.
You watch that movie it's fairly regularly that you need to
every
skip that.
Day.
There's like
every morning.
Like his role in Django Unchained, a movie that is already extremely problematic. Like he does an Australian accent. It's so embarrassing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I forgot about that until you said it.
It is brutal.
Yeah, so there you go. That's the only one.
Ryan, I just thought
that
there was
a common thread among Ron Howard
and Jon Favreau, the two directors that you describe in this way. There's that common thread of former
Cowboys
actors.
Cowboys and Aliens?
Yeah. Sure.
Oh.
Yes, yeah.
Cowboys
and Aliens.
And Aliens. yeah, that's true. That's true. And
think,
you know what?
Yeah.
I know I kind of said this. I do want to clarify. I'm not like so much of a snob, or like I'm not like so much of like a former film student that I think that like direction begins and ends at visuals. Everybody brings different things to the table.
For sure.
You know, like here, Richard Linklater, a director I love, who I think is a great director. I would never call him like a visual guy.
Sure.
You know, like I would never claim that his movies are extremely visual, but I think that he makes amazing movies and I think that he's a great director. I just, you know, Jon Favreau's not making Boyhood. It's just, you know, it's just he's a straight down the middle guy. And that's great. Everybody's great. Everybody's doing great stuff. Chris, I love you, buddy.
Hey, I love you guys, too. I think
I didn't say anything about
love all around.
But I do love him.
I love Sam.
He's no longer with us.
Well, I mean, that's debatable whether he'll be back or not now. But we're just kidding, Sam. We need you back because you got to talk about them jackets. But no, I agree. I think it's at this level of these people they're up for scrutiny. It's okay to have opinions. I think Favreau though has done enough different stuff that this might be perfect for him. This might be where he shines, or he does it for a year and then we see somebody else show running.
And he gets an executive producer credit until the day he dies.
Exactly. But
keeps on rolling in.
Right, yeah.
Listen, Jon Favreau doesn't need anything from the droid heads, you know what I mean?
Well, I also think
but I got
like,
your coin.
I also think of directors like Richard Marquard, like who directed like Return of the Jedi. Was he just like a capable human? Like, or do you think everyone on set just knew what was going on? Like, does Star Wars need someone that is very powerful with performance? Maybe for the new cast. But, like, by the third movie, do you actually need someone to draw?
Yeah, is it like an episode of ER where it's like, I mean, what is the director really doing?
Yeah, exactly. Like there's a certain degree of make-em-ups, and like everyone knows these characters now, so it's like, yeah, just be the character.
I mean, Oscar Isaac said in an interview recently, he was like, it's so much easier. We're just kind of like taking it easy now.
Yeah,
you know, like everybody's made their money, their contracts have been negotiated, they're just like, let's round this thing out,
let's just have a little fun.
Well, if anything,
yeah,
though,
I feel like once the first actor says like, after this one I'm done, everybody's like, oh, okay, we're taking it easy.
But if anything, you look at the directors of the visual effects as almost in these movies being just as much a part of the as large a director as the overall one for the series.
That's very true. Yeah, like
I
they
assume
have to,
that, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, they have to be on set. They have to be, like, working with the actual director to make sure the shots make sense for the effects.
And creating almost, I mean, what the percentage was in the last film that was all CGI, there's almost a majority of the film, or a good portion of it, is not shot by a cinematographer physically. They shoot against so many green screens that you have to give the credit to that team that creates the real world in
that
CGI.
Is true.
I always assume with the original trilogy, like when you were saying with like Richard Marquand, I assume that like it's all kind of like the movie Poltergeist, you know, which was like directed by Tobe Hooper, but everybody kind of knows it was directed by Steven Spielberg.
Right.
Where it's like that kind of thing. Like it's like Richard Marquand probably said action, you know, but it was also like, you know, George was directing the movie.
Yeah. I wonder why we always do that, though. Like, we go back to the director, even though we know it takes a village.
It is like a, you know. So, you know what? Everyone who works on Jon Favreau movies are straight down the middle. No, I'm joking.
Just a bottle of mediocrity.
Yeah, it is. I mean, like, it's unfair in both respects, right? Like, when a movie works, everybody credits the director, and when a movie doesn't work, everybody blames the director.
Yeah, they're not blaming the PA that like had to go make photocopies for like 16 hours.
Well, as we keep this conversation on the directors, we'll move on from Mr. Favreau, talk a little bit more about Mr. J.J. Abrams. As there are rumors about Episode 9 starting to circulate, little things here and there, there's images that have popped up. We've talked about them briefly in the past. This is potential spoiler territory, but a lot of this is unconfirmed. But if you don't want to know anything going in, maybe skip the next 5 minutes or so.
If you haven't seen Episode 7 yet.
Yeah, if you haven't seen Episode 7.
Yeah, you need to go back.
Been really just hanging on to those prequel days and not wanting to jump in the sequels. We understand. Get into Episode 7 when you can. JJ has, at least for the moment, we have the rumor that Kylo Ren's helmet may return. That there's the possibility that they have changed direction for the character a bit after he smashed the helmet following Snoke ridiculing him for being a child in a mask, trying to mimic and play as Darth Vader. He destroyed it in horrible, angry fashion as he came down in the elevator, left it in pieces on the floor. But yet, it seems like he's going to go back, pick those up, and put them back together
again.
Who's
a child in a mask now? Someone's cut in half. You're not a child in a mask.
Yeah, wait a second.
Showed him. I can do whatever I want. So, with that said, how do you feel about potentially this being kind of a backtrack? It could be. It could be perceived that way. It may not be. We don't know what the story is going to be yet.
I'm wondering, hearing this, if... So, JJ came back for Episode 9. Which is great news. But Rian Johnson in Episode 8 kind of like undid a few things that JJ did or like quickly dispatched them.
Yep.
And it does make one wonder if JJ was like, wait a second, I can go back in. You know, Snoke is important. And like, I do like the helmet. You know, like that kind of
thing. I had an answer for that.
So I'm wondering if it is like, if he's actually going to kind of dispatch and dismiss some things that Rian Johnson did. Namely, the big thing might be Rey's parentage.
If that happens, I will be...
I'll be bummed.
Horribly disappointed.
They look into the lens and they say, it's you, Rian. You're her father.
I think if the mask is back, the father is you, all of us. I think if the mask is, like, motivated, because... Obviously, Vader needed the mask to live. I'm sure he probably wouldn't choose to wear the mask if he didn't need to. I can see that, but if it's just like him building another mask to put on so we can still see the same action figure, it'd be a little disappointing.
Well, it's,
I think it'll be a new mask.
It'll be a variation, I believe.
I wonder if like he gets like beat up and he has to like wear it.
Well,
something.
That could be. There could be an early action sequence in the movie if they kind of drop you into a scene with Kylo fighting against the Resistance, and then he becomes injured and needs the mask. That'd be one thing. Still not something I would love. But my biggest concern is that you remove the helmet and you get all of Adam Driver's glory as an actor and everything he brings to each scene. I don't want to see that go away again. I don't want to see even if he has a half mask, even if it's a Bane style mask.
I'm sure they toe the line with that.
That's funny that you say that, because I never thought about how in Episode 7 the amount. What he does with a mask on is actually like really impressive.
He does.
His physicality is like very specific.
Yep.
He's so good. But
especially
I
that shot.
Wonder,
remember where he? I can't remember what part of the movie. Sorry to interrupt. But where it's shot from below, and you see him stomping away. I think it's when he's in the base and Rey has escaped, and he's sort of like sauntering back and forth. I think that moment there is, you can just feel the presence and the anger of that character without ever seeing his face.
Yeah, we don't actually see his face until like an hour in, right? Like we don't see his face until his interrogation with Rey.
She says, "Hunted by a creature with a mask," which is like such an amazing line.
Yeah. Oh man. You know what? Here's Chris. If I could co-opt Hot and Fresh for a sec. Hot and Fresh take
get
is
in.
He comes in. He's wearing the full Vader outfit.
Oh, the whole rigmarole.
Yeah, he's like, I'm fully, you know what? No one can stop me. It's like it's too big for him.
Yeah, it's like he's kind of swimming in it.
Yeah, that's what I think.
That's what you
want.
Wait,
pan down, Darth Vader, or we think, is it? No, I mean, it's Kylo Ren. Was that good? Was that like Chris?
That's not bad. You have to throw a pan in there. Every shot is a pan.
I said pan down.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, that's the only requirement.
Oh, I should have forgotten what I said at the beginning.
Yeah,
that'd be more like Chris.
You accomplished
now
it.
Now you would have had
I think it is interesting, though, because if you're bringing the mask back, whether you're using it or not, one of the big questions I have about Episode 9's Part 1, 2, and 3 are basically, will this be... a redemption story similar to how like Vader was redeemed a little bit at the end? Like, is everyone going to get their just desserts here? I'm wondering, because like, I feel like the modern choice would be to end on like a subtle note of tragedy. But like, I feel like with Disney owning this, they wouldn't do that. So I'm curious to see, like, movie going audiences probably want to see the more dramatic ending just based on how things are now, but I feel like what works better for Star Wars is to end obviously on a note of hope. So I'm wondering, like, when we talk about like, why does he have the mask back, like, is this because of his tragic fate? Like, what does that mean?
It's tough because Snoke is dead.
Mm-hmm.
Because now Kylo is essentially the big bad, so it's like,
right,
if he has a redemption arc, who, I mean, you know, there will be something in it, but like, who is
General
who are they
Hux,
fighting
excuse me?
Them?
General
oh, yeah.
Hux. That's true.
But I mean, like, he's so comical,
that,
though.
That pissy little shrimp.
But that'll be that leftover moment where, for the majority of the movie, he'll be the big bad. But then when they need one more person to dispatch after he's made the turn, it'll be General Hux.
Right.
And
when
someone
needs to fall down some kind of long shaft.
Yeah.
I hope they just find some stuffy old British guy, or they like make...
Oh, excuse me. Didn't they cast him? He's already in it. What's the actor's name that they cast, who's a clear stuffy old British guy who can fit in as a villain?
Richard E. Grant.
That's exactly.
Oh.
Richard E. Grant.
Oh, wow. Oh, there you go. There it is.
There's
like,
and whatever actor from Game of Thrones
will be
is
like,
available.
he will come in and whatever Game of Thrones people are like, I'll step in. There you go. I feel like the big bad then will just be like the general of an army, who's kind of at, you know how like
the
episode,
second order.
You know how like episode one begins, or I'm sorry, episode four begins with like Vader and the Imperials are still a little bit at odds. Like, what if we kind of loop back to that sentiment?
Wait, what?
You know, like at the beginning of episode four, Vader.
You mean like
and,
when they're all in like that big room?
Yeah, when they're all around that table after
Don't try to use your hokey religions on me, Vader. Yeah.
Because Vader just botched that mission, right? And so I feel like maybe that's going to set Ren down a peg or two, you know?
Like he still has to deal with some kind of bureaucratic.
Yeah, right. Because Vader botched that mission. He was not able to get the plans, and he's
treated like a child in a mask again.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if it'll come full circle, and
then he smashes the mask again.
He just keeps doing it, and there's just a montage of him making masks, and then like he stubs his toe and smash.
I think the only thing that makes sense to me in this way is that if he is so broken by Rey denying him that he has to find his way back into the mask because he, you know, finally had this moment where he thought he had someone else, and he's always been alone in the galaxy. Yeah. Or at least since he kind of became of age and Luke turned on him in his mind. Yeah. He's been so alone and he just needed someone else to join him. And to have that happen, he now almost has to take a childlike mentality of like resigning inward again, and no one can possibly ever accept him. So he has to just go back to who he was.
Oh, interesting. I kind of like that. That makes his challenge of redemption so much harder too. Because it's like, how would you get him there? Like, it would have to be like a sacrifice or something.
Yeah, I think that's the way he redeems, if there's any redemption story, is a sacrifice by him.
Yeah.
But that's what would have made so much sense is if Leia was still around and he sacrificed for his mom.
Right.
That would have been the powerful moment. And, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be, my point to the fence is going to be that.
excuse me, you're calling your shot is what you meant.
I'm pointing my shot right at the bleacher seats, baby. I got a nosebleed. So I think that it's gonna be that he has a redemption at the end, and then, you know, they're all like, "Come on, like, come be with us." And it's gonna be like a similar to the feeling, although not, you know, Frodo never went bad, but at the end of Return of the King, spoiler alert, where he's like, "This world isn't for me, Sam."
Yeah.
You know, like, it's going to be like, I can't be with you guys, even though, you know, like, I've seen too much.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'll kind of go off on his own. And maybe to the island. Oh, that'd be great.
I called it. Man, self-exile?
Yeah, he's going to go to the island. And the last shot of him is going to be on that rock looking at the two suns.
Do you know what he's going to do?
Oh,
he's
going
He's gonna throw a bag down on like a bed, and it's gonna have those books will come out, and like they're being returned back to the Jedi Temple.
Oh, that'd be beautiful.
Oh my gosh! And then I just got goosebumps.
Hit the button, and the Falcon's gonna explode.
And the 1812 overture will start playing. The only thing that bothers me is that that'll be like 2023 with episode 9 part 4 by the time we see that.
See, I think it's where it kicks off the Kylo trilogy, where this becomes a Kylo trilogy.
Right. Yeah, everyone's getting a trilogy.
Why not? Why not at this point? All right. One other bit of news. Kevin Smith has visited the set of episode 9. You spoke about Kevin Smith earlier, Ryan. To bring it back, he, of course, said that he wept on set. He said the same thing when he visited episode 7. I guess Rian Johnson did not invite him to the set of episode 8. Don't know what that means. But
he did do a great... He used to have a show called Smoothie Makers, and he had Rian Johnson on after Looper came out, and he does like a four-hour interview, and it's really great. So I recommend
So they're friends.
Ooh, I want to find
that. They are friends.
I think he kind of got on Rian Johnson's nerves a little bit.
Oh, no.
But it was still a great
That's
interview.
That's very difficult
just such
to do.
A sweetheart.
Isn't that very
Yeah, I mean, like,
Rian Johnson doesn't...
No one's rude by any stretch. It's just you could see kind of what's happening, but Rian Johnson is great. It's a great interview, and Kevin Smith is great, too.
Well, the comments from Kevin Smith, he said, JJ's doing the Lord's work. No surprise that he would say something like that. The movie's fantastic. He said that it is the biggest set he's ever seen in his life. So he felt like this was something beyond anything he's ever done in the independent film world, anything he's ever created. But he's been to other large movie sets.
Yeah.
So
it was bigger than the apartment set in Chasing Amy, for sure.
I remember when he visited the set of episode 7. I track what sets Kevin Smith goes to. He knew about BB-8 before anyone knew about BB-8. And he kept saying, like, there's this robot they built that's, like, incredible. Like, I can't tell you about it, but he's like, it's amazing. When you see it, it's like magic. So I hope there's something magical that we see.
He didn't say anything else like that. He did say he saw a career best performance from one of the actors in the series, which it could be anybody, but maybe you feel like that's a legacy character, and maybe it's the moment where
I think it's Mark Hamill.
Where Luke, appears in his Force Ghost moment.
Oh, my gosh.
It's hard to top. Honestly, I love Mark Hamill's performance in The Last Jedi, and if he has something better in Episode 9, good for him. I'm thrilled. Yeah. I love what he's doing.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, it's Force Ghost Han Solo is what's going to happen.
Guys.
Do you know why? Are you familiar with the tale of Darth Plagueis?
Guys, I'm going to check this movie out.
You're going to buy a ticket?
You know what? I think at this point, I'm going to see it.
We'll all be there. Disney Orlando. Galaxy's Edge and the movie comes out.
Ooh.
Oh, baby.
That'll be amazing. My gosh. Do you think that... I just want the cast of Creed and Creed 2 to be in one of these movies now. Shout out to Creed 2. I've seen it. It's changed my life.
Chris and I saw Creed 2 with our friend Jana of the Mean Book Club. And it was excellent, as was the first Creed. And we were all very emotionally moved. But Chris has texted me non-ironically several times, worrying, like, legitimately about the well-being of Rocky Balboa, the character.
It really fundamentally broke something in me. I don't know what it was.
I do have to say this. This is has nothing to do with Star Wars. I'm not like a huge. I don't generally consider myself a huge Sylvester Stallone fan. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's a particularly good actor, and he's never really captured me. However. He is a miracle in the role of Rocky Balboa every time.
Even Rocky V?
Yeah, he's always, hey man, he's always pulling his weight.
He's always doing
the movie might not be, and he may be failing it as a director, but
he's always
my
doing
goodness.
It. He's always doing it.
And in Creed and Creed 2, he's used so perfectly, and he is such a miracle in these roles. Go see Creed and Creed 2.
I just had to bring it up. Yeah. I had to bring it up.
Chris, for Chris's well-being, like you, it's like, I do believe in Rocky. I do.
Yep,
it's part He's of real. My plan for the weekend. That's the way He's I start my weekend. Is Creed?
Yeah, baby. That's phenomenal.
So we'll see Sly Stallone at some point. If Nick Nolte and Werner Herzog can be in Star Wars, Sly Stallone.
Hey man, if he can be in Guardians too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, all right, last bit of news, and we've already touched on this in another episode, but Galaxy's Edge, we had said the Falcon had been completed. Well, now Star Wars and Disney have confirmed that. It's not just the overhead shots from some sort of spy camera. This is actually from the official Lucasfilm Star Wars account of them showing a shot of the completed Falcon at one of the two locations. And really, it's just a beautiful sight to be seeing. The sun is setting it's behind amazing. The Black Spire on Batuu. There's still the construction going up, but you can see that there is a real-life, outdoor, fully formed hunk of junk, best hunk of junk in the galaxy, ready for all of us to go and take thousands upon thousands of pictures in front of. And I can't wait.
Neither can I.
Wow. I feel like I'm going to have Rocky-level emotion when I see that thing.
Here's the thing, everybody. The world's falling apart around us.
I'm just
about
grabbing it. Onto the stuff I love.
Sink deeper into it.
Thank you for
Chris,
Star
when
Wars.
Is the when, Rocky the
Italian,
pod starting?
When the Italian stallion takes steps down the ramp of the Millennium Falcon.
That could happen. Disney made that a vision. That's for the next Rocky movie.
Well,
Chewbacca.
That's going to do it for this edition of the pod. Check out Creed 2 and Creed 1 if you haven't seen it. Any of the Rocky films, if you're behind on those, they're all available.
You can skip those.
Just watch the speech in Balboa, though. For real, the worst part of that movie is the fight at the end.
Go watch the speech in Balboa, because that's how winning is done.
That's how winning's done.
Well, if you want to come back for more of this Rocky Star Wars talk, next week on the pod, we actually have something special coming your way. We are on the verge of the one-year anniversary of The Last Jedi premiering in theaters. And a special episode of the pod, we will rewatch The Last Jedi, and many of us will be seeing it for the 7th, 8th, maybe 20th time.
I just watched it in PlayStation VR. Sorry, go ahead.
But Sam will be seeing it for just the second time. It's been a year since he saw it, and we're going to all experience that together, record a podcast. You'll hear it next week, but something to look forward
Sam
to.
Sam is going to watch it for the second time with all of us talking over it.
That's hilarious. He's going to like be asking, who's that character?
I'm going to be saying the lines.
Yeah. I'll have the VR headset on, don't worry.
But in the meantime, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram at droidspod, and then of course emails at droidspod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Also, if you want to send us a voice message through Instagram, new feature, you can go in a direct message, send us a little 1-minute voice message that we may play on the podcast. Do that at droidspod on Instagram. Easy way for us to get your voice here on the pod. If you leave us a review on iTunes, we would be greatly in your debt. It helps us get the word out and get more people to listen to this podcast. But that is going to do it for this week's edition of the show. For Chris and Ryan, Sam, can't wait to have you back next week. Can't wait to ruin your second experience with The Last Jedi. That'll do it for the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast.
We have what they grow beyond.
Annie?
You boys looking to go to medieval times? Chewbacca.
Oh, now he's asking if we're looking to go to medieval times, which is like so much more sinister.
I'm glad. I really hope that Rocky Chewbacca stays around. I'm a fan.
Hey, Chewbacca. Hey, it's Chewbacca. It's Chewbacca. You guys know.